You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Community Connection SmartCast Microlearning Podcast Series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Sylvia Hanna, and I will be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we will review a case presentation of a patient with non-melanoma skin cancer. Joining me today is Dr. David Miller, Director of the Center of Merkel Cell Carcinoma and Co-Director of the NMSC Multidisciplinary Clinic at Massachusetts General Cancer Center and Assistant Professor of Medicine and Dermatology at Harvard Medical School. Welcome, Dr. Miller. It is so good to have you with us today.
Hi, Dr. Hanna. It's a real privilege to be here today.
Well, thank you for joining us. Let's start with a case of cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma.
Of course. This is a case of a male veteran in the seventh decade of life. He presents with hypesthesia of the right forehead, ptosis of the upper eyelid, and diplopia. He states his symptoms began about 6 weeks ago. 2 weeks prior, he presented with a cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma on his right eyebrow, which was treated with Mohs micrographic surgery. Small caliber perineural invasion was identified at that time. The lesion was cleared after two stages. A recent MRI demonstrated thickening of cranial nerves 3 and 5, and a subsequent biopsy of the V1 branch of the trigeminal nerve revealed squamous cell carcinoma.
Interesting. Now, if we were to just take a step back and go 2 years ago, how would you have assessed this patient's risk for recurrence or a metastasis?
It's a really important question, Sylvia. Risk stratification is crucial in managing squamous cell carcinoma as it enables personalized patient care. The risks of adverse outcomes like recurrence, metastasis, or death is influenced by various factors. These include the patient's immune system status, tumor size and location, and whether the tumor is primary or recurrent. High-risk areas include the head, neck, hands, feet, pretibial, and anogenital regions, with tumors larger than 2 centimeters classified as high risk, and those over 4 centimeters as very high risk. Histologic features indicating poor prognosis include poor differentiation, deep invasion, perineural involvement, and lymphovascular invasion. The NCCN guidelines categorize these factors into low, high, and very high risk groups. This risk stratification is integrated into staging systems to guide patient-specific workup and treatment. In our case here, the patient had several risk factors, including location and perineural invasion.
And what would your current approach be in managing this patient?
Well, given the lesion's recurrence and evidence of nerve involvement, there is justified concern about a poor outcome, such as the inability to achieve a cure through surgery or radiation without significant morbidity. In this context, upfront immunotherapy could be a viable option. Cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma, often resulting from UV radiation-induced mutations, tends to respond well to immune checkpoint blockade, a form of immunotherapy. This responsiveness is partly due to the high tumor mutation burden associated with better immunotherapy outcomes. Furthermore, the importance of the immune system in managing these carcinomas is underscored by the increased risk in immunosuppressed individuals, such as those who have undergone solid organ transplants.
Now, you mentioned immunotherapy. What are the currently FDA-approved immunotherapy agents for locally and advanced CSCC?
Yes, well, fortunately, studies have shown that the administration of anti-PD-1 antibodies can lead to significant clinical benefit for patients with advanced SCC. In 2018, the first anti-PD-1 agent for CSCC, cemiplimab, was approved based on the strength of pooled results of patients with metastatic and locally advanced disease. At the time of approval in 2018, there were data from 75 patients with metastatic squamous cell carcinoma who had at least 6 months of follow-up from accrual using response evaluation criteria in solid tumors, also known as RECIST, version 1.1 to assess disease status. The data demonstrated a confirmed, centrally reviewed overall response rate of 47%. 4 patients experienced a complete response and 31 patients a partial response. Among the 35 responding patients, the median duration of response was not reached, and 80% of the patients had ongoing responses at the data cutoff. 60% of responding patients maintained those responses for greater than 6 months. There were also data from 33 patients with locally advanced disease, and these data demonstrated a confirmed, centrally reviewed objective response rate of 49%. Among the 16 responding patients, the median duration of response again was not reached, and 81% of those patients had ongoing responses at the data cutoff. 63% of responding patients maintained those responses again for greater than 6 months. These data have been updated since the time of approval and are overall consistent with the data I just described. The efficacy of pembrolizumab was investigated in patients with recurrent or metastatic CSCC enrolled in KEYNOTE-629, a multicenter, multi-cohort, non-randomized open-label trial. Patients received pembrolizumab 200 milligrams IV every 3 weeks until documented disease progression, unacceptable toxicity, or a maximum of 24 months. And the objective response rate in that trial was 35% in a cohort of 105 patients. And again, we see durability with 69% of patients maintaining their response for at least 6 months. And an update to that study added patients with locally advanced disease, in which 50% of the 54 patients with locally advanced disease achieved an objective response. As a result, these two therapies have become our current standard of care, and they are recommended for patients with locally advanced or recurrent metastatic squamous cell carcinoma who are not candidates for curative surgery or curative radiotherapy.
Dr. Miller, you shared the efficacy of these immunotherapy agents. What are the common treatment-related adverse events that you see clinically in patients treated with cemiplimab and pembrolizumab? And are these adverse events similar to what was observed in the clinical trials? How does your multidisciplinary team manage these adverse events?
It's a great question. Patients fortunately generally respond well to anti-PD-1 therapy with a low discontinuation rate to side effects, approximately 10%, despite treatment emergent events being common. Now, these side effects can affect various tissues, most frequently the skin, the gut, the liver, and endocrine organs. They may appear shortly after the first infusion or up to a year post-discontinuation, though they typically occur within the first 2 to 3 months. The diverse nature of immune-related adverse events necessitates multidisciplinary management, often involving collaboration with specialists in dermatology, gastroenterology, endocrinology, pulmonology, neurology, cardiology, amongst others. You know, fortunately, patients generally respond well to anti-PD-1 therapy with a low discontinuation rate due to side effects, around 10%, despite treatment emergent events being common. These side effects can affect various tissues, most frequently the skin, the gut, liver, and endocrine organs. In the clinical trials, we saw 99% of patients developing a treatment emergent adverse event, with 50% of patients having a grade 3 or greater toxicity. The most common side effects were fatigue, diarrhea, pruritus, nausea, cough, abdominal pain, and rash. You know, these side effects are difficult. They can appear either shortly after the first infusion or up to a year post continuation, though they typically occur within the first 2 to 3 months of treatment. The diverse nature of immune-related adverse events necessitates multidisciplinary management, often involving collaboration with dermatologists, gastroenterologists, endocrinologists, pulmonologists, neurologists, cardiologists, among others.
And are there currently investigational agents being evaluated in patients with cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma?
Absolutely. The immunogenic nature of cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma has spurred extensive research into various immunotherapeutic strategies. These include investigating monoclonal antibodies targeting immune checkpoints like CTLA-4, LAG-3, and TIM-3, therapies aimed at innate immune receptors, such as toll-like receptors, are also under evaluation to enhance anti-tumor responses. Additionally, oncolytic viral therapy is being explored as a treatment option. However, the abundance of potential treatments and the complexity of patient profiles pose challenges in achieving adequate trial enrollment. Therefore, it's essential for the clinical research community to strategically select and manage trials to ensure sufficient participation and effective learning outcomes.
Dr. Miller, is immunotherapy an option in patients with high-risk resectable cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma?
Another great question, Sylvia. The recent success of anti-PD-1 therapy in treating advanced and metastatic cutaneous SCC has led researchers to explore its preoperative use in high-risk resectable cases. A trial with 20 patients reported a 75% pathological response rates from two doses of anti-PD-1 therapy. A larger phase 2 study involving 79 patients who received four doses of cemiplimab before surgery showed a 50% complete pathological response rate, with an additional 10 patients achieving a major pathological response. 1 year follow-up data indicated a 12-month event-free survival rate of 89% for all patients treated with neoadjuvant cemiplimab, with a 95% event-free survival rate for those achieving a complete pathological response, and 89% for those with a major pathological response. Remarkably, only one out of the 50 patients with either a major or complete pathological response experienced disease recurrence over an 18.7-month median follow-up period, which is really quite incredible. Based on these findings, the latest NCCN guidelines recommend considering neoadjuvant cemiplimab after a multidisciplinary review in cases with either rapid tumor growth, in-transit metastasis, lymphovascular invasion, borderline resectability, or when surgery alone may not be curative or could result in significant functional limitations.
That was very informative. Now, returning to the patient originally presented, the 70-year-old veteran, after discussing the treatment options with him, what was the management strategy and how did he do on therapy?
We started him on cemiplimab RWLC based on the NCCN guidelines and our determination that there was a low likelihood of cure with surgery and or radiation, and that both modalities would lead to significant functional morbidity. After three cycles of cemiplimab, a repeat MRI demonstrated stability of the pathology of those cranial nerves, and he continues on immunotherapy with our plan to repeat a skull-based MRI every 3 months and take the journey from there.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Miller. We learned a lot today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.